In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss werewolves, werelions, and weremonkeys in Prudence, The Custard Protocol, Book 1 by Gail Carriger. Everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover Season 2, hooray! Podcast about young adult and new adult books, series, and authors that is full of spoilers. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire, and today we're going to discuss Prudence by Gail Carriger.
Standard disclaimer, if you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening and go read or listen to the book, then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just like the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
I'm going to record that one day. I'm going to time it one day.
You should. You should time it. So, hi, everyone. Season 2, episode 2 is happening right now. And guess what? There's another voice. Did you guys hear that? Did you hear that other lovely voice? It was so great. It's Claire.
Fancy British.
Oh, you are. You are. And I really hope that I don't slowly start mocking you, but then maybe I will learn to improve my British accent if I do that.
As long as you're not Dick Van Dyke.
But I love Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah, Dick Van Dyke's amazing. Just not in Mary Poppins.
Oh my gosh. So hi.
Hi.
This is new.
New and weird.
It is a little bit weird, but you'll get used to it. It'll be fine. So, do you guys remember Claire from the Lady's Guide to Petticoats and Piracy episode? Was that episode 33? Yeah, Claire is a listener who always commented on every single one of our Would You Rather posts, and she had the best comments. And honestly, I was sad this time because you didn't post anything, which, I mean, it's okay because you're on the show now and I can hear your answers to everything. But I missed seeing your ridiculous response this time. But Claire was so wonderful that I forced her to join me on the podcast. So she is my new co-host. Hooray!
Yay! I've been promoted.
You have been promoted.
You really love me.
Promoted from lurking in the background and commenting on everything on social media.
Promotion.
It's a good promotion. It doesn't earn you any money though, so.
No, but it gives me less creepy status.
Yes. Well, I don't know about that. Let us get through this episode first and then we'll determine how creepy you are.
Maybe you'll get creepier as the month goes on. We are in the month of Halloween.
That's true. So you could get potentially creepier and then I might like you more.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Totally dressing up for the Halloween episode.
It's gonna be good. It's gonna be a good episode. Okay, so I think that you need to explain to everyone just exactly how you came to be here. I mean, I know I talked about it a little bit, but you really need to tell your story, I think.
It's not that grand, not that long. Gail Carriger.
Oh, okay.
Tweeted that she was appearing on the podcast, to which at the time I had never heard of. Sorry.
Okay. It was only like episode 11 or something. We weren't that far in. It's fine.
Okay then. And I was bored at work and I was like, ooh, download. So downloaded it, listened to it, enjoyed it, went back, started from episode 1, and that is basically it. So you can totally blame Gail Carriger for me being here and being the creep on Facebook.
And that's okay. I will blame her for that, but only in a good way. She's not blameless.
That's a timeless joke.
Don't be so heartless, Claire.
Oh, but it's not like I'm soulless.
Oh my. That was terrible, but I'm definitely excited that it happened.
I love a good literary pun.
Yes. Oh, okay. Oh, I loved it so much.
Prudent to continue.
We can't really go further than that, though. I guess we could, you know, do a little bit of etiquette and espionage. to see how we can further use our puns.
You know when you just refer to a book series and never actually the individual books? I will use my manners and not mutiny over this discussion.
You must. Otherwise, I will get out my waistcoat and weaponry and use them against you. It's getting really bad now. We're stretching it out too far, but there's only one more title in that series.
Some conspiracies. This is a conspiracy. This entire thing is a conspiracy. I'm very paranoid right now.
Did you curtsy about it, though? Did you give me a curtsy when,
oh,
when we started?
Oh, completely properly. You can't see it because it's just a headshot, but yeah. Yes,
I could imagine that it was there.
Yes. It's British protocol. Okay. I don't know.
Is it a custard protocol?
Oh
no. Okay, that's enough. Jesus.
Yeah.
I do love Gail Carriger though.
Oh, she's amazing. Her social media is absolutely fantastic. It is spot on social media as well. And oh, I love her costumes. Her steampunk out a teapot bag's amazing.
Yes. I would like to say that on her website I am still the picture that comes up when you look at her cosplay page. I'm right there at the top. Yes, with my Pickleman outfit and my bumber snoot.
I love
and her face is like, yeah.
Every time you hear the finishing skills, you just want a bumber snoot.
You have to want a bumber snoot. He's adorable.
Yes.
That's the finishing school is the one that I read first of all of this world. I didn't even know that the original ones were a thing.
Oh.
I know.
10 so years ago, it's actually celebrating its solace. It's celebrating its 10-year anniversary. That's amazing.
I know.
And I had, past tense, had an original solace and blameless and all of the other ones. I had the final one. It had the word Egypt on it. It was spelt incorrectly. And I had it. I had it. Oh. And I loaned it out to a friend. And that, long story short, I don't loan books out anymore.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, that would be such a good one to have, too. How is Egypt spelled?
The Y and the G were the wrong way around.
How would you even pronounce that? Egypt?
That sounds exactly like a narrator I'm currently listening to, doing a British accent.
No, then it would be Egypt.
I've been Egypt to see the pyramids. It was all owned.
Keep that in until a couple of weeks from now.
The rage will be released like bees from the stomach.
Oh no. Ew, I would not want that to be my ability.
No.
Oh. It reminds me of Candyman.
Yeah. Anything with a scarecrow, actually.
Yuck. Okay. No, that's enough. That's enough of that. So is there anything else we need to talk about before we get into the summary of this delightful book?
No, it was delightful.
It was delightful. Okay. Well, get ready, guys, because this is a long summary, but now you have another exceptional voice to listen to, and you can just be lulled into a magical state by her voice whenever she reads her part of the summary. Okay. But guess what? I'm going to start with the worst voice.
The power has gone to her head.
It has. Okay. I'm not going first anymore.
Oh, my God. Power hungry.
I'm going to force you.
I need to put my phone voice on now. Lady Prudence Alessandra McCone, Akadama, biological daughter of Lord Connell McCone, I'm going to have to stop that now, is the alpha of the London Werewolf Pack, and Lady Alexa McCone, forming Tarabotti, Mujar for Queen Victoria and adopted daughter of royal vampire Lord Akadama, and the Honourable Miss Primrose Tunstall, daughter of the Baroness Ivy Tunstall, vampire queen of the Wimbledon Hive, and Almond Tunstall, an actor, a thespian, are at an event full of ladies and gentlemen and vampires and werewolves. Prudence has been tasked by her vampire father, Lord Akeldama. Remember him from nearly every other book by Gail Carriger? Yes, yes, I do.
We love him. We love him so much.
He's amazing. To retrieve a snuffbox from a gentleman at the party. Of course, this is not an easy task for a normal young lady of quality.
You have to say it that way. Quality.
Quality. I can't say it now. I'm trying to think about it. Quality. As she shouldn't be seen on the men's card in the men's card room, but Prudence is no normal lady of quality. She is what the scientists call a metanatural, one who can touch a supernatural being and take their form, leaving this the one she stole completely human until the sun sets or she's too far away from them. Since she has this ability, after acquiring said snuffbox in a silly and flirtatious manner, she steals her Uncle Rabifinor's wolf form and she dashes out of the party wearing her bloomers, a flowered tiara and her friend Primrose on her back. She arrives at Lord Akeldama's house and gives him the box, only to find out that he's not interested in the box or the snuff, but instead a hidden compartment holding a new variety of tea leaf grown in India. If Prudence's mother, Alexia, from the Parasol Protectorate series likes the tea, then Lord Akeldama will send Prudence to India to acquire more. And of course, she does.
Prudence, better known as Rue, meets her ship and her pre-selected crew, the Ducklings, led by Spoo, whom I love so much, and head greaser Aggie Finkelington, who nobody likes very much at all. And she adds a few more members. Do you like Aggie Finkelington?
Yes.
But she's so mean. But I guess I do like her.
I like the brashness.
Do you know that I thought that it was Agatha at first? That she was Agatha from finishing school, but it's not. It doesn't add up that way, and Agatha's already doing her own thing. But I thought that it was her at first.
Oh.
I know.
Mm, that's a leap.
Yeah, I know. But the name is similar.
Yeah.
Give me a break. So...
Because there's lots of interlinks things. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So she adds a few more members to her crew. Prim's brother Percy as librarian and navigator. And I love him because he's a librarian. And Canel LeFou as chief engineer. Rue and Canel go way back to when she was 8 and stole vampire form to throw him, 12 years older, into a duck pond. They begin to get settled on the dirigible, the spotted custard, and prepare for float off. Lord Akeldama is offering a going-away party for them, but when Prim wears her sun hat at nighttime, he adds the horror! Oh. Embarrassed at her social faux pas that they must leave as soon as possible, missing the party. Rue's parents, Alexia and Connell, are there to watch them float off, but it seems like getting Rue out of the country might have been their idea. Something is afoot, friends.
I love a conspiracy theory.
Oh, yes. A curtsy and a conspiracy. Don't forget. I can't stop.
As long as it's done properly. Oh, it's a sickness. They travel along nicely, making their way into the ether sphere with a little to no trouble, enjoying each other's company on the deck with tea and crumpets with lemon curd. Mm. Everything is rather delightful until they land in Malta and their tea there is interrupted by a lioness in the tea shop. What?
A lioness in the tea shop?
That's just crazy.
It's ridiculous.
The lioness steals Rue's parasol given to her by her mother, which we all know the importance of that. Rue chases the lioness into a very scarfy area and is greeted by a beautiful Egyptian woman who seems to know what Rue is. She gives the parasol back, tells Rue not to go to India, then disappears. On her way back to the spotted custard, Rue is stopped again by another mysterious woman, Anitra, who tells her that they know each other from long ago, gives her a terrible book written by the brilliantly named Honeysuckle Isinglass, which also happens to be Prim's mother. She's a vampire queen of all the people. How embarrassing. The book is from Goldenrod and Anitra also disappears. Who is Goldenrod and what's the deal with this awful book?
The deal with this awful book, friend, is that it is a clue from Lord Akeldama, a.k.a. Goldenrod. We don't know that yet, but we kind of do.
Secret.
I know, secrets. But we're full of spoilers, so it's okay.
Okay.
Apparently, he had intended to tell Rue many things before she left. I wonder what else we don't know. Lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Upon arrival in India, the spotted custard is boarded by the mysterious Egyptian woman again, Lady Sekhmet, who knows that Rue is metanatural and still warns her of being in India. Rue instructs her crew to be on the lookout for the woman's lioness. Are we finally putting two and two together here? She learns that vampires are not so popular in India. The Rakshasa, as they are called here, then they are a slightly scarier variety of vampire. Then they are invited to a garden party where Rue gets a cipher to interpret the book clue. She also learns that the person she was to meet about the tea, which doesn't really seem like that is exactly what is going on, but Rue hasn't picked up on that yet, although we as the readers definitely have.
Yep.
That contact has been kidnapped, and the King Air Wolfpack is being blamed because the contact is the wife of an army brigadier who works with the pack. The King Air Pack is led by Alpha Werewolf, Sidhe McCone. And how would you say her name? Do you say it Sidhe, or do you say it in the weird Scottish way that no one knows how to pronounce?
Oh, I don't do Scottish accents. They come out very wrong. Sidhe? Yeah, I would say Sidhe. I learned the pronunciation from the narrator.
Okay. Well, the King Air Pack is led by Alpha Werewolf, Sidhe McCone, who you might recognize from Finishing School, which we love and Claire clapped about. She is Rue's great-great-great-great-great et cetera niece and was turned werewolf by Rue's father. Sidhe's beta, Professor Lyle, also from Finishing School and every other book by Gail Carriger, offers to help Rue in her endeavors, meaning that she can take his form if she needs to. After the party, they are met by a Rakshasa, who doesn't want Rue to be there in India either. The cipher says that their plans have changed and that Rue has been given sundowner status, a.k.a. the permission to kill supernaturals.
Dum dum dum.
Dun, dun, dun.
Things are starting to pick up here, because in addition to her new sundowner status, Rue is also suggested a romantic agreement with Canal. In which she hopes he'll teach her saucy things. I need my fan. One is about to swoon.
Always swoon backward. Don't swoon forward into your pudding.
With your hand to your hair, forehead.
Oh, yes, of course.
In a dramatic fashion. Fetch me my fainting couch. Also, we encounter Lady Sekhmet again, who guides them around town. But then she's kidnapped by strangers driving an exploding flower shop and leaves behind a monkey necklace, as one does.
As one does, definitely.
Rue decides to take up Lyle's offer to take his form to investigate the kidnapping and finds an interesting book in Mrs. I can never say this name. Featherstone's. I sounded drunk there.
You did, a little bit. We need to talk about this name, though. Because everything that Gail Carriger talks about, she says that this is like an actual name, and it's pronounced Fanshawe in your...
In my language.
Yes, in your language, Fanshawe. But the audiobook pronounces it Festenhugh, which, I mean, that's still missing several letters. Featherstone Hoff.
See, that the surname is, well, I would say Featherstone, and then you get the H-A-U-G-H, which is quite similar to my surname, which is pronounced Orr, so Featherstone Orr. It's a hideous name.
It is. It's too many letters, and it doesn't make any sense.
It's too jarring. You look at it, and you kind of go, I'm just going to call it Featherstone.
I like that, yeah. I was just really excited to hear what you had to say about it.
Not much. I just look at it and I feel, no, I don't know, too many letters. You know, I mean, you're going to get a good score in Scrabble, but that's probably about it.
Yeah, and it doesn't even count because it's a proper name.
Yeah. I mean, you would get feather and then you get stone. And then the, it's just a sound.
Okay, well, whatever. What's happening in Mrs. Festenhugh Featherstone? Oh, what's happening? What?
This is where did we leave?
Mrs. F. Yeah.
Mrs. F's room. Okay, we're back in Mrs. F's room. We're still in Mrs. F's room, about to find a book on interesting mythological creatures. Another form of shapeshifter, but not a werewolf. Called a Venara. Ooh. Rue takes Canal along for the jaunt, which includes him riding her. Which earns sputtering and raised eyebrows. As in order for her to become a wolf, she must lose her clothes. After they break into the brigadier's room and steal the book, they're chased out of the encampment and run away until the tether snaps and Canel is left with a naked Rue. She's pretty unperturbed by this, as she's used to it, but Canel is embarrassed and offers his coat to cover her. When they get back to the ship, the decklings, particularly Spoo, are enthralled by Rue's shapeshifter abilities. Percy reads through the book, and then there's also a bit about supernatural acceptance decrees and discussions of these, blah, blah, blah. Shapeshifters exist, we know this, and they are part of the decree.
Then the lioness shows up again. Ah, oh, hooray!
Then the lioness shows up again!
Rue knows that this is Sekhmet now, and asks her to change shape and explain. She also wants to become a werelioness, but that's for later. She agrees and explains that she was working with the Venara and was kidnapped / catnapped by the Rakshusa. Side note, Mrs. Thank you, Venja. Mrs. F was never kidnapped at all, but went freely with the Venara. The Venara are upset because none of the original plans have come to pass, but really, Rue had no idea what was going on, and really, she still doesn't. So let's see if we can explain. The Venara have the tea that Lord Akeldama wants. Bloody John, a vampire, is pretty much in charge of the East India Tea Company, except for this tea. The Venara are weremonkeys. They have been hidden for forever and would like to remain that way. They'd also like to get paid for their tea. They believe that they are not part of the supernatural acceptance decree, but the Rakshasa are. They do not get along with them. And maybe that's enough explaining things for now.
Yeah. Rue, Percy, and Sekhmet are going to meet the Venara. They run off through the jungle. Rue, in lioness form, with Sekhmet and Percy riding. Rue is running a little too fast and very nearly runs off the edge of a cliff. Percy falls off into the jungle and Sekhmet falls over the cliff. Yikes.
Yikes, indeed.
Rue takes off running as fast as she can in the opposite direction to snap the tether so Sekhmet won't die. Upon returning to the cliff as a person, Rue doesn't find Percy or Sekhmet or the shattered corpse. She does find an interesting steam train elephant that traverses the gorge, and of course she climbs it and gets inside. Upon arrival, she is met by a guard, and they don't speak the same language. Shock. She tries to talk to him, but, oh yeah, she's only wearing a scarf. And the guy seems to think she's a goddess when she starts flailing her arms in the get-out gesture. He does! It's so funny. He jumps out of the elephant into the gorge, but luckily has a parasol chute?
It's a parachute, but she said it looked like a parasol. So it's a parasol chute. Just go with it.
She rides the elephant across the gorge, and when she crashes into the other side, she sets off a flare and a new person joins her. He's covered in hair, though. He grabs Rue, even though she tries to tell him not to. So now she's the hairy one with a tail instead. Monkey Rue carries the man to safety, and then they go to the Venara village.
And guess who's there? Sekhmet and Percy.
Yay!
Although Sekhmet is in a cage as a lioness, covered in silver, and Percy is handcuffed.
Ooh.
Rue talks to Percy because, yes, she can speak in monkey form, and they have a conversation with the Venara leader about the supernatural acceptance decree. They don't want to be included in anything that the Rakshasa are involved in, but Rue manages to convince everyone, even herself, that they're already included whether they want to be or not, because the decree uses generic terms like shapeshifter, which, hey, that's what the Venara are. Things seem to be going okay, but then the spotted custard shows up, and so does the army and the King Air Pack. Darn that flare that she sent out. Come on. What was she thinking?
Giant party invite.
Yes. Everyone is there.
Everyone. The custard begins scooping up the tea while everyone else is in discussions that may or may not lead to war. The Venara that became human ran off and has come back as a monkey again. So Rue is now human again. The Brigadier wants his wife back and she doesn't want to go with him because then the army will hurt the Venara. Rue sneaks around when everyone starts fighting, trying to steal monkey form again to rescue Percy and Sekhmet, which she does. They escape and then Rue motions for the werewolves to leave the battle, which kind of brings everything to a halt. The Venara weren't trying to hurt the army and the army couldn't hurt the Venara anyway. The Brigadier gets on board the custard with Rue and the crew and then they scoop up the Venara leader and have a quote-unquote civilized conversation over tea about signing the contract, which they do. Rue has to do some finagling and the wording and who the contract is with and all that kind of political stuff, but it all works out in the end.
Now, as they're headed back home, preparing to convince Lord Akeldama, Lady Macon, the Diwan, remember he's the head of the shapeshifters in London, and the Queen to accept this agreement, Canal decides to agree to Rue's sensual agreement. But we really need a better term for that. Something funnier.
Sexcapade.
Sexcapade?
The flashing of ankles. You see more than our ankles, though.
You too. Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh. Okay, we'll work on that. Now they also have a were-lioness aboard, too. Sekhmet, whose real name is Tasharit, has joined the crew. I wonder where they'll be off to next. They're going to get into some more shenanigans.
It would be helpful if there was a second book in the series. Oh my god.
Wow.
That would be imprudent of us to talk about it, though.
That's the title of the next book, you guys. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, do you have a favorite part?
Oh.
There's so many great things.
I don't know if it's necessarily like individual parts for me. Like, there was just bits of scenes that kind of like just made me chuckle rather than like specific things. I like it when everybody, this sounds so dirty, rides Rue.
It's my favorite part too, though. I love that they're riding her all the time. And like, yeah. I can just imagine eyebrows going up and like gasps and, you know, oh, horror and fainting all over the place. Anytime they mention riding Rue, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But especially when Canel did it.
He's so inexperienced. In that way.
But not the other way.
No, he's French, of course. I really liked any of the scenes that had Virgil in. So, Percy's valet.
Oh, yes.
I really liked him because he was just this little side character that he just played so well with other people, especially Spoo, when the intruder comes on and Spoo's riding one end. It's all about riding. Virgil's on the other and you just get this image of them booking up and down and it's just absolutely crazy. It's a slapstick book. Like, it's something that you can read and chuckle at, but if you were to see it, it would just be absolutely hilarious. I need somebody at Netflix to pick this up.
Oh, that'd be great.
All of Gail Carriger's works need to be on Netflix. So Netflix, we beseech you.
Yes.
If you can do it to the Bridgertons, yay! You can do it to Gail Carriger.
I don't watch much British stuff. I guess I need to start. Like, I've never seen one episode of Downton Abbey.
Oh, I do have a story about that. But I did take my mum to see Downton Abbey last week because my mum loves Downton Abbey. And I've only seen the first season. And I said, oh, ma'am, so has this happened? And she went, yes, but there's more than that. I went, no, I think I've just covered about 5 seasons. It's fine.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of it.
I don't think you're missing. You could be missing things. You might not be missing things. Downton Abbey is an acquired taste.
Do you think?
Yeah, it's not because it's a historical drama that's very, very slow. Like, it's not overly dramatic.
That doesn't really sound like my cup of tea.
There's no monsters.
I require monsters in everything.
There's literally no monsters. I mean, unless human nature is the greatest monster.
No, unless the human monster, or unless they turn into a sentient mist, I'll have nothing to do with it.
Oh, murder mist.
The murder mist.
No, there were moments from this book.
Okay. Okay. I don't know if there's anything else that I like more than Cannell riding Rue.
Well, the riding was good, but do you remember when first went round to Percy's house and he's buried in his books? And then it was the bit, it wasn't so much the scene necessarily itself, it was the fact that they kept saying the word nibbles. Nibbles, nibbles, nibbles. And it was just, it had me cracked up. Absolutely cracked up. And I think this is possibly where Moira Quirk, the narrator of the audiobook, just surpasses herself, because she's such a good narrator for me that it just hit every little comedy cue that it could get that you may not get if you read the physical book. At least it feels like for me that there's just this little, the way she kept, I don't know, it's just the way she kept going, nibbles, nibbles, I'd like some nibbles, I'd like some nibbles.
I do love her. She's a good narrator.
She really is. And I think that's where a lot of the time a narrator can win an audiobook.
Oh, definitely.
Definitely. What about the scene where they're at the garden party and Percy's like, oh, I can do this. I'm hardcore. I can eat this curry.
Oh.
And Prue has the curry. She's like, oh my, a glass of milk would wear down wonders right now. His head explodes like something out of a cartoon.
We didn't even talk about how Percy is going along with this whole thing because he wants to learn the mating habits of chili peppers. We completely left that out.
There was also the fact that there's something about nocturnal napping habits of cabbages as well. It's like, dude, you're a professor? Really?
Oh.
Really?
I love Percy so much. Oh. Especially as the series goes on.
Yeah, he's one of these characters that definitely feels like you're going to see some good development from. And I will admit, I have not yet read / listened to the final two in the series, purely because I was going to do the great and terrible re-listen of the Gail Carriger books in chronological order.
Mm.
So I am up to those ones, and I think I will hold off until potential podcasts.
How can you?
Grit, determination, and a whole lot of university books to read.
Okay. I'll probably end up listening to the entire series. Ooh, gross. Don't show me those books. I'll probably end up listening to the whole series again, like, as we get on through. Except for now, I have a whole new stack of books that I have to listen to for future episodes of the podcast. So I might not have time to do a full listen through again.
That's what's preventing me from doing them right now. Because I think if I can listen to one want to listen to now, and I can put that off when I kind of, I say need, but need's a harsh word, when it's just to make it a little bit more manageable.
Yeah, we have a lot of good things coming up, but anyway, let's keep talking about this book for now.
I have two words for you.
What?
Fart and propeller.
no, I love how she's so embarrassed that the propeller makes that sound. I don't.
It's not just the sound, though. It's the viscous liquid that leaks as well.
No.
Oh, it's so gross.
I don't like that word.
Fart.
Yeah, I don't like that word.
Fart.
So then it happens a lot, and they say it a lot, and I'm like, oh, cringy. But that makes the whole thing even more cringy, but, like, in a good way? Is that a thing? Can you be cringy in a good way?
Yeah. I think it's just been a 12-year-old kind of joke. It's like, oh, yeah. They said fart. Yeah.
Is that your least favorite part? That's my least favorite part. My least favorite fart.
I really liked it. I think I was driving and I had it on, and then suddenly they kept saying the word fart. What's it with me, repetitive words? And they kept saying fart, and I was like, what? Excuse me. Tell back 30 seconds. I actually, I am so immature. I'm sorry.
I am too. I think
so. That was your least favorite.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I really dislike any of it. But if I had to pick something, I just don't like that word.
How do you feel about the word moist?
Moist doesn't bother me so that's much. That's just funny.
This is the kind of conversation you have at work all the time. It's what words make you like gross out and which ones you really, really like.
I don't know that I'm really grossed out by any words. When I was younger, though, I hated the word sip. And I don't know why. If anyone asked me for a sip of something, I would just like cringe.
The current word of the moment in our house is ooze.
Ooze. I like
it's such a good word to say. Ooze.
I like ooze. I feel like we need to say ooze like into the microphone. Ooze.
Nice.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Is there anything that you didn't like about the book?
There wasn't. Okay. Two things I think I hated the most. No, I didn't hate them. That's too strong. My negatives were Rue, for all the fact she's a good friend, you know, honestly, she would defend her to the hilt. And even Percy and Canel, you know, the entirety of the Spot of Custard, you know, she defends her parents. She understands her parents in certain, you know, different spheres. You know, her mother's very different to her pa, who's very different to Dharma, Daddy Dharma. But she's extremely selfish.
She is.
And I get that there's probably an element of being entitled, you know, bearing in mind who her parents are, who she's grown up with and to be and around, you know, the mention of her having all the Worth dresses. It was like crazy. I was actually listening to another podcast and they were talking about Worth dresses in a historical context. And it kind of like made me think, oh, I kind of get it a bit more now. And that was really interesting. And it made me actually think again about Rue being, I know she doesn't have that choice that Dharma is going to put her in these expensive latest fashion or fashion forward gowns and all that kind of thing, which is a very assertive character. So she wanted to put her foot down. She would put her foot down, but it's kind of made her quite selfish and quite entitled. And she leaps without considering consequences, sometimes in a very literal sense, when she's a freaking lioness. And I still don't understand why she had to be the lioness with Sekhmet, the actual lioness, riding her back. It was purely because she wanted to change forms and that was it. And there wasn't really, for me, please correct me if I'm wrong, any justification for her to be that lioness.
No, I remember there was some like argument about it, but it didn't make any sense. It wasn't a necessary thing. I think she was really just trying to force herself into lioness form.
Yeah.
But I mean, it doesn't even make any sense. You're right, because she could have ridden Tasheret with gloves on or something. Is there some like fear that she would touch her accidentally and then she would go into lioness form without planning it? Is that what the
Possibly.
Thought is? Or
it was never really covered. And even then, I know they've just talked about, you know, donning men's clothes for ease and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But she could quite have easily had breeches on underneath her dress.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't be able to see. And she could have had a man's shirt, long sleeve shirt on over the top. Mm-hmm. And I know you needed to make her into a lioness. And she needed to be separated from Percy and Sekhmet. But I just didn't get that bit. I just didn't get it. And then the follow-up scene when she's on the elephant head travel later thing, I was like, how does she know how to use the engine room in it? I know she's got some experience on the dandelion fluff on a spoon. Dirigible. But that bit kind of lost me. And I felt like I fell out of the book and I had to claw myself back into it. And that was probably the hardest bit for me.
All of that did happen really quickly, too.
Yes.
I mean, I've listened to this. I've read this book like 3 or 4 times before. But and I was thinking, you know, like looking at how much of the audiobook I had left, I was like, she needs to get to the Venara soon. This is a very like almost the very end of the book. And then all of a sudden she's running through the jungle and then
She has
they
a tail.
Fall off, and then she's climbing and doing all of this stuff, and then she's inside, and then she's driving the steam train. Like, all of that happened in a quarter of a chapter. It was so fast.
Yeah. That's actually something when I was like, because I listened to it twice. The first thing I put for negatives when I was thinking about ahead of the recording seemed to speed up. Rue selfish. Why did she have to be a lioness? That bloody elephant head.
These are all good things.
Yeah.
I also like that, or dislike, but while she's in the elephant head, she like knows that it's old. Like all of this equipment is very old. How did she know that? You're right. This is a perfectly legitimate question. How did she know all of that stuff? How did she know that it was old equipment and that it was going to be destroyed and everything that happened? How did she know that?
No, it's information that a lady of qualité wouldn't necessarily know unless they've been to a finishing school, perhaps. I mean, we do have a living museum in my area, and you can go on the steam trains, and some of them are working, some of them not, and they're all from like 1700s onwards. Mm-hmm. And these old steam trains, which is what I equated the elephant head to be, as close as representation as possible, do have big metal plaques on in them, and it does tell you the make and mark, and it does have the year of manufacture. So I kind of assume that would she would like, you know, say, oh well, this is set in what, 1890s, mm-hmm. and it might say 1852, so you can assume that it's an old machine. But yeah, it's like context, you know. There's only so much technological advance you can have in a steam engine until, you know, you turn into a combustion engine. And, you know, it because with it being steampunk, it's set within the way I understand steampunk is, it's like they invented steam power and stopped.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of where I got. And yeah, so that like, I'm with you, that entire bit got confusing, and it didn't necessarily open up after the second listen to either.
Yeah.
I mean, it did, like I said, draw me out of the narrative. Mm-hmm. But there were witticisms, you know, and Gail Carriger is such a good writer that she draws you back in with just like a snarky or silly like response, or, you know, there's just something that brings you back in and you're like, right, I'm back in the story now. So, you know, if that's all I can say really is a negative, you know, you're in pretty good standing.
Yeah, that's not a very big negative.
No.
Especially when in the middle of all of that, she does her weird sash noodle arm dance. Because the guy thinks that she's a goddess. So she's like, naturally, what would a goddess do? This weird noodly arm dance. That is exactly what a goddess would do.
And then, I think I was doing that in yoga tonight. Yeah.
And then the guy jumps off, like, just jumps out of it completely randomly. So that was a good part that happened inside all of that weird deus ex machina sort of stuff. I felt like we needed a way to get from point A to point B, and so what is that going to be? This
a
weird steam
head. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Do you have a favorite character?
Spoo!
I love Spoo.
And the voice on that Moira Quirk does on the narration, it's just amazing. Every single time, I'm just struggling with it. Sorry, I'm thinking about it.
I like that she's got a bit of a, like she's not breathing through her nose.
Yes!
Oh, lady captain, it's me, Spoo. And she's there's no air coming out of her.
See, I can relate. I can't breathe through my nose properly. I can totally relate to Spoo. We best buds on a fundamental level. Hey up, lady captain. Love it.
I like Spoo too.
Yes, Spoo.
She kind of reminds me of Viev.
Yes, that's exactly the vibe I got.
Yeah. Except for now, Viev is Genevieve, and she's Canel's mother.
Yes.
she's an adult.
She's a 60-year-old lady, and, you know, yes. Sending her offspring. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's it. It's like so soon after listening to the Finishing School series and then coming back, you know, well, I said, was it 40 years later? Probably something like that-ish.
Yeah, I guess it would have to be.
It's 20 years between Parasol, Protectorate and the Custard Protocol.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell.
And then, yeah, it's about 40 years.
Yeah. So you kind of, so 40, so she'll be about 50 to 55.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
Yeah.
See, they're all grown up. Everyone's grown up. Yeah.
And as the series progresses, you may or may not see more of them.
Yay. See, this is what I like. I purposely don't want to know what's going to happen so I can be surprised every episode if and when we cover them.
Well, we have to. We have to finish this series because it's great. And I'm really excited for you to experience the last book. I feel like you're going to be going, like every, 5 minutes of the audio.
I won't drive and listen.
No, you probably shouldn't. You might crash.
Yeah. I'll just listen to it in the house. I won't even cook and listen, which is my other common audiobook experience.
Yeah, you need to stay safe while you're listening to it.
I'll just cup of tea in the sofa.
Yes. That'll be good.
What about you? What was your favorite character? Or who was your favorite character?
I really like Tasharit, but that's really more as the series goes on. I like her a lot as we get through the rest of the series, and Percy too. But so I guess in this one, I really liked Spoo, obviously, and Kennel. I like Kennel quite a bit.
He's so exceedingly French.
He is.
That's what I like about their whole family. It's like they don't seem to spend that much time in France, but they're still so exceedingly French. And it's very French stereotype from a very British perspective, which is fantastic, given that Gail Carriger is not British.
No, she's not.
No, but she's got the essence of, like, the British interpretation of the French.
Yeah. I think her mother is British.
Yeah.
I think.
She's got to have a link somewhere to get the Britishisms.
I think it's her mother. I think there was an event that I went to recently that she was at and she was talking, and I think she said that it's her mother. I think she said her mother is British. Or I was watching her on Facebook Live. I can't remember.
You can always tell when somebody doesn't know anybody or has any relation to anybody from a different country, because it's just like, it's too jarring.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just little phrases and you're like, no, we don't say that at all. And it's the same, like, even if a British person tried to write about an American, I couldn't do it because I don't have the American thought process. I would like say Herb with a H.
Yeah, no. That's not how people say it over here.
See,
I say it, but I don't Herb. I don't say it so seductively, but
no, it's like aluminium. Americans tend to say aluminum.
Yeah, we do say aluminum.
Oregano.
I think we just need to have an entire episode of you and I saying words that are pronounced differently. Can we do? That's the entire episode.
I mean, it'll get a bit weird when we start saying colour, and it's like, well, it's colour, but I pronounce the U.
How do you pronounce the U?
You don't.
I'm trying to make my mouth make a shape that would make that sound, and it's a good thing that this video is not visible to anyone, because I make a lot of dumb faces.
Or is it?
Or is it? We're going to start sharing videos. Nobody wants to see us. And there's so much stuff that we cut out. Nobody wants to see that.
Oh, I'm going to stop listening to the podcast.
You can't. You're not allowed.
I'll download it and I'll press play and I'll just walk away. Oh God, it's Claire, shut up. Oh, why did you say that? Why?
Oh no. What have I done? gosh. Okay. Let's get back to the book. Were you surprised by anything that happened in the book?
More the fact that it was suddenly Binara. What? Where'd that come from?
Yeah.
People, tails. Hello. Yeah. It's kind of what we've discussed already, that whole sped up bit was just kind of like, suddenly we're talking to monkeys, which is cool, but more of a, woo, we're there. I don't think anything particularly for me stood out as a surprise. It was nice. No, that's more of a, it's not really a surprise. Like the little, like Sid here, when they talked about her chatelaine, and then they mentioned the little things from the finishing school and those little touches every now and again. It wasn't a surprise per se. I suppose it was, ooh, it's a nice little Easter egg and a surprise. Yeah. Nice little touch.
Yeah, I think it counts.
Yeah.
I would say that it counts because you've read that series and then you were surprised when the characters showed up. So yeah, it totally counts.
Yeah. That was nice. It was nice. I think the Maltese Tower was quite a surprise. I liked the descriptor of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've been to Malta. It's tiny. It's teeny tiny. And like just imagining that tower and the way it would encompass the entirety, the architecture, the entirety of that island. And it's like, I mean, it's, you could probably walk it in a day. It's that teeny tiny. Yeah. It's a beautiful place. You couldn't go there for more than a week, really, because there's not there. Sorry, anybody from Malta, you've got a lovely country.
send us there.
Yeah, we'll do a review.
Yes,
we'll read a book.
What? a pocket-sized travel guide.
Yes,
written by an Honeysuckle Isinglass.
I want my own name.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have to come up with a terrible one.
I'm going to try and come up with one of those ways that you can, you know, like, yeah, what's your librarian name and how do you work?
Oh, yeah. Did you see that? Did you see the librarian name? What is your librarian name?
I can't remember. I worked it out. Oh, I can't remember.
Mine was, I'll have to post this on Facebook so everyone can tell us their librarian names too. But mine was Louise Trapes Cheese. It made me sad that my first and last names rhymed. Trapes Cheese.
How did I work it out again? I can't remember.
It's the oldest person that you know.
Age-wise.
How would you walk across a room, an ingredient from your last sandwich or something like that? The main ingredient from your last sandwich.
I only ever really eat one kind of sandwich. Billy Stumble Cheese.
Do you eat grilled cheese sandwiches?
I do like a grilled cheese sandwich. I don't do it like in a frying pan. I use an actual grill. So, because I'm British.
That's right.
We don't fry things like Americans do. So, did anything surprise you?
Oh, yes. Well, I already talked about it. But the loose noodle goddess dance and then the man jumping out of the elephant head. That was a shock to me. I wasn't expecting him to listen to what she was saying, like, you know, she was doing her arm motions. I wasn't expecting him to actually just jump out. That was a shock. But he survived, so it was okay. But that's really the only thing I was shocked about, that he survived. That's it. I wasn't really shocked by anything.
Why
it's hard.
Jump out? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, she wanted him to get out of her way, but
everybody,
I guess,
just does what she wants, don't they?
They do, but you know, she is a goddess, apparently, and you have to do what a goddess says.
No, because that's just flawed. But to be fair, the fact that they are flawed, like, because I say, like, Rue is the water elvish.
Yes.
And Percy, so, I don't want to use the phrase self-involved, because he's not. He's so forgetful and, you know, canal. They all have flaws and ridiculousnesses about them. And that's probably what's an endearing thing. They're not perfect.
Mm-hmm. And that's what makes them seem like a more realistic character. You could actually encounter them somewhere in the 1890s or whenever this is. I feel like you would actually see these types of people. They're not so proper, and everything about them is perfect.
Yeah, I think if you've read any kind of like Regency or any Victorian era literature, and I don't just mean like Charles Dickens and stuff, but you get the realistic hierarchy within those type of books. But then if you just go to like the low level fiction area of the bookshop, not the classical, you still get this aristocracy level, and then like the gentry level, and then it's like peasants. and it's kind of like they are up there in, you know, I mean, Prim is and Percy are the children of a queen, and Rue is the daughter of, well, essentially the king of the werewolf pack, you know, the mm-hmm. alpha. And you know, as much as Lord Akadama is a rogue, he's still politically powerful and
mm-hmm.
under the table powerful. shady deals. Oh, I love his drawings. The Seymour Down to Earth, which I suppose makes it more of a work of fiction than it does anything else. Where animals off to one side. If you take it as fact. See, that's what I like about books where it's like, you know, it's the same as like any kind of dragons are real. We have magic. Look, I have pointy ears, or I am an elf. And, you know, when you talked about red, white and royal blue,
mm-hmm.
and the whole LGBTQ thing was kind of like integrated. Almost. Mm-hmm. It's just a thing. It's there. We don't need to spend an entire chapter justifying its existence.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of like about it as well. It's just there. You have wares, you have vampires. The end.
Some of the wares are monkeys, apparently, and some of them are lions, even though you're not used to that. But here they are, and it's a thing.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you wish would have happened?
I wish the scene with the elephants would kind of be a bit more legible. It's probably selfishly for my own sake.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think there's anything that stands out over much for me. What about yourself?
I just wish that Rue would have known what was going on from the beginning. I don't like that. I mean, I get it. And I know that we have to stumble along with her and figure out what's going on. But I wish that she would have known what she was getting herself into.
Yeah. Do you not think she should have realized that it's more than just a tea delivery, though? Oh, poor naive Rue. Come on.
But then she does try to hire her, you know, her lead engineer to teach her sensual things. So she is she's very naive. Bless her.
Sensual steampunk.
Yes. Ooh, sensual.
Steamy steampunk.
Steamy sensual steampunk sexcapades. And then I snort at the end of it, which makes it all the more better.
oh
my gosh.
Shit, it's so close.
Nope. The magic of editing. I can just edit out that.
No, you, the realism. Keep it in. It's sexy.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I think finally, after so long, it is time. Or would you rather? It's time. It's time. It's time. It's time. It's time for would you rather. This is why you're here to begin with. And now you get to answer all the questions. And we're all so excited to hear what you have to say. So the question that I asked to you guys on social media is, would you rather be a werelion or a weremonkey? On Facebook, 92% of you would prefer to be a werelion, with only 8% as a weremonkey. On Instagram, it was 89% werelion and 11% weremonkey. And on Twitter, with, again, a grand total of 2 people answering on Twitter, werelion, 100%. Well, we clearly need to work harder on Twitter. So James says, all I have to do to be a weremonkey is stop shaving. So clearly he wants to be a weremonkey. Oh, you need to read some.
There needs to be a comment about a tail, but let's not go there. However, Jessica does. She says, monkey! Functional tail. Yeah.
Bonnie says, "Wear lion, strength and power in a gorgeous package."
Nice. Ariana says, "Wear lion. They are proud pack animals that have fluid grace and amazing coiling muscles."
And then Jeremy says, "I feel like y'all are underestimating the shenanigan potential of the wear monkey," which is definitely true.
Completely, Jeremy, 100% with you. Yeah. Wear monkey for life.
Yeah. I definitely would also be a wear monkey.
Yeah.
I don't know why you wouldn't want to be a wear monkey, because it's almost exactly like you are right now, but you have a tail. You can still
speak.
And more
hair.
Well, you have more hair, fine. But I mean, you could shave it. You just shave your body. You just get
that's a lot of full, commitment.
Full body wax. I don't know. Laser hair removal. Yeah.
I mean, it's like you carry a human form just as a monkey.
Yeah.
And when you're a monkey, you're naked.
Yes. Unless you're wearing a loincloth. How do monkey bosoms work? You were a monkey lady. I know that they talked about it a little bit, but
have you watched a nature documentary? Get some David Attenborough education. It's on Netflix.
I have watched some Planet Earth. But I just wonder, I guess I should say, where monkey. How do where monkey bosoms work?
I would say the same as, like, what kind of monkey did you picture? I think this might be a key part of the discussion, because if you pictured like a great ape style, like chimpanzee, orangutan kind of thing, the bosoms are pretty much the same, except they're a bit hairy, but they've got
hairy bosoms.
Yeah, you can see the pronounced latching area for baby monkey. Can I say nipples? I'm going to say nipples. You can see the nipples.
You can say nipples. That's allowed.
You can see the nipples. I'm totally going to post some pictures of female monkeys on Facebook now.
Yes. I guess you need to, because I need some monkey education. Yeah.
But then it's kind of set in India, and so is the Jungle Book. And they're all orangutans.
Yeah.
Do they have orangutans in India? I assume so.
But they're apes, right? They're not monkeys, because they don't have tails. I got yelled at virtually on Facebook because I posted pictures from The Lion King, just because with all of my Would You Rathers, I like to do GIFs. And so I picked Nala as a were-lioness and then Rafiki as the were-monkey. And I know, and I should have prefaced it. I know that Rafiki is part mandrill and part baboon, or some like amalgamation of those. But he has a tail. And I showed a picture of that to the person who said that he wasn't a monkey. But they're part of the monkey family, the old world monkeys, or something like that.
So is it
monkeys?
Is it like spider monkeys that are prolific in India, because you know you see the images of the temples with the monkeys around them and that kind of macaque monkeys.
Yeah,
they are. Ooh, they've got big teeth.
But I just wonder what kind of monkey these Venara are, because in the shape-shifting universe of Gail Carriger, you maintain your same mass. So these must be really big monkeys.
Well,
so what kind of monkeys are they?
Great ape, because it's not a stretch, pardon the pun, to shift from human to great ape. If you just Google monkeys in India or monkeys of India, 10 species of unique monkeys that are found in India. So you kind of imagine that if they're going to be were monkeys in India, they would be derived from these species of monkey. And they are like teddy bear size, you know, they'll be big. But they're not human sized. It's almost as if you're downshifting the mass.
I wonder something about this then, and we'll have to talk about it more as we progress through the series. But I wonder if this was a mistake.
Whether that the monkey or
that the monkeys are human sized, and that the type of monkey, even though it's not mentioned, but I wonder if this was a mistake.
because I don't want to ruin anything about the fourth book, but there's a lot of thought put into the size and the mass and like the weight of transformations.
Interesting. Interesting.
So I wonder if
put a pin in this and kind of
I
like,
I think we do.
Yeah, this is going to be a revisit topic.
Maybe we can get Gail Carriger to join us and see what she has to say about it.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Like, so, Gail.
Okay, monkeys. Anyway. Yes. Take a note. Monkey Gail. Okay, let's go on to our next question. What's the next one?
Ooh. Would you rather be a Raksusha vampire or the traditional English vampire?
I like the idea of Nosferatu and those creepy old school style vampires.
Thank you. That's the image that I had, more of a Nosferatu kind of. Ooh.
Yeah. But I also would love to be one of Lord Akeldama's dandies and, you know, be very fancy and being a traditional English vampire. So I think I might have to say that. Although I do like the scariness.
Yeah. You could be a traditional English vampire who, for Halloween, gets dressed.
Yes. All right. That's what I'm going to be. I'm going to be a traditional English vampire dandy, Raksusa vampire all together in one.
I'm totally going to join you in that one. However, I'm just going to throw this spanner in the works. So Lord Akeldama is like ancient.
He is.
But we don't know how old he is, but we do know he's ancient. And Rue does say that at points she tries to figure it out and she gets some kind of like Grecian kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So is he a traditional English vampire or is he a traditional Greek and Grecian vampire? Because then you've also been to Egypt as well. You totally know. Because you also go to Egypt,
mm-hmm,
in the Parasol Protectorate.
Mm-hmm.
And Primrose's mother, the queen of the Wimbledon Hive, and her subsequent drones,
mm-hmm,
they are not a Nosferatu-esque or in any way stand out other than the fact that they are Egyptian and not English.
Right. But then we encounter more vampires and more vampire types as we go throughout the series as well.
Oh, you can't wait to read them.
So.
That went creepy.
Did. You're going to yell at me about this one, I have a feeling. So
I'm not going to yell at anybody.
Would you rather enjoy British tea or Vinara tea? It's a hard question for you to answer because you're very British.
I'm currently
drinking. You're enjoying your tea right now.
I'm on my second mug. Without having tasted the Vinara tea. And then I trust Alexis. If Alexis says the Vinara tea is superior, and with her, her taste buds are immaculate. She's queen tea. I'll go with Vinara tea.
Yeah.
However, can't beat a bit of PG tips. Or Yorkshire tea.
What is your favourite kind of tea? Of all the tea, what is your favourite? Like, what is your go-to tea? You're going to have to teach me how to have tea.
You see, just because I'm British and I like my tea doesn't mean that, you know... There's a misconception that we know if it's ginseng or all that kind of poshness. So fancy tea. I just drink tea, but PG tips because it's usually on offer in the supermarket. But then, you know when you go on holiday and you come back, where you won't know because you don't drink tea. If you go on holiday and you come back, you're like, I just need a cuppa. Any tea is good. It's the way it's made more than anything else for me, I think. It's got to have the tea in first, and then if you want to put the milk goes in then, because you don't put it in beforehand, you've got to judge it right. Okay. I used to drink tea black.
Oh.
Hardcore. Yeah. And I can't, fun fact, drink tea on a morning.
Why?
I can't. It's got to be coffee.
Are you allowed to like coffee?
Yeah.
Okay.
So do you drink tea at all? That's not southern sweet tea, that's just basically, you know, sugar, because you're not allowed it.
That's right. I am not allowed that much sugar. I like a chai tea.
That's more, is that not like an, is chai tea not Indian?
I that's what I thought of when they were describing it, because they said it was very spicy, and I feel like chai tea is a very spicy tea, and I like that, so I would definitely go with Vanara tea if it's any way, shape, or form similar to chai tea, and that's how I imagined it.
Chai comes from the Hindi word meaning tea. While the exact origin of traditional masala chai is up in the air, the origin of chai tea owes its roots to South Asia. So the Vanara tea could be more of a chai tea.
All right, so that's what I pick.
If Vanara tea is chai tea, then I'm going British tea, because I don't mind perfume to a degree, but I couldn't drink it all the time. Mm. Like, not to the bucketful quantities I do.
Yeah. Now I feel like when I get finished recording this episode, I'm going to have to go and have a chai tea.
You should.
Should. Definitely should.
Should.
Yeah.
Do you get chai teas with like cappuccino style froth milk?
No. I don't like the frothiness.
It's a chai latte, I think, that's classed as.
I do like a little bit of cream in it, but I don't like the I don't like a big amount of froth. I don't want to have a giant mustache.
No.
Whenever I drink tea. Unless I'm wearing a mustache for whatever reason. I don't want a foam mustache.
No. It's not a look everybody can pull off.
No, and I don't think that I can. But maybe I should. Maybe I should start wearing frothy mustaches. What? I don't know. Let's go on.
I have no idea what planet we've suddenly gone to.
I don't either. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't either. What's the next question? Oh my gosh.
Okay. Ooh, I feel like I need a posh voice for this one.
You do.
Would one rather... Thank you for your support. Would one rather use the wrong sized calling card or wear a travelling outfit with a sun hat for night calls? Oh, lordy me. Oh, dear me. I need to clutch my hanky.
I'm gonna go with the wrong size calling card, because I don't know why, but I would not be caught dead wearing a traveling outfit with a sun hat at night. So I'm going to have to go with the wrong size calling card.
You can only imagine, based on Ivy Tunstall's taste in hats, what that sun hat would look like.
I know, it would be a nightmare. It would be huge, and it would have too many things on it.
Feathers, lace, ribbons. Yes.
Actual live birds.
Bees.
Birds with bees coming out of their mouths.
Flower pot right in the middle. Yeah. Oh, it would just be...
Yeah.
But you know Biffy would have made it, so it would be quality work. Mm.
Yeah. If we got it at Chateau de Poop.
I'm going to wear a travelling outfit with a sun hat for night calls, so long as it is made by that fine milliner, Rubifino, at Chateau de Poop.
I think Rubifino would have you in an extravagant hat. And it would be perfect.
It would be, it might be the wrong hat. We may have to flee the country because of my reputation. However, it would be stylish AF. So I'm going to go with the hat.
Okay. Last question. Would you rather be raised by a werewolf, a vampire, or a soulless?
Ooh.
Or all three, like our dear Prudence. But we can't do that. You have to pick
Why
one.
Have one? Probably the werewolf.
Yeah, maybe a werewolf.
Yeah. Ooh. There's the idea of pack. You know, it's the having that close family, and you know, you could have a pet dog, and not have a pet dog at the same time, and it would be house trained, which is a bonus. And you could go for long rides, you know, tickle its tummy and teach it to do tricks. So that's a bonus. Whereas with the vampires, I think the vampires want to eat you. I mean, yes, okay, the werewolves would eat you when the full moon's going and they're not in the cage. Mm-hmm. But the vampire will always want to eat you.
Yeah.
Always. And the soulless, I don't know. I don't. For all the fact that, okay, so Alexia was never really raised by her father.
Right. She was raised by... out gallivanting.
Yes. So she doesn't have a soulless parental figure.
Mm-hmm.
And because Rue was split between the three, she hasn't had a soulless upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, I don't know if they realise what the soulless is completely. You know, there's a history that's lost.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very difficult one to try and say, yeah, that would be a good upbringing, because I think with a soulless, it would just be fairly normal.
Yeah. Standard. Yeah, I think it would be too.
So I pick werewolf because it's cuddly and warm and fun and family with a little bit of danger.
I love that. Choose vampire because I will always choose vampire over anything else ever in the entire world. I will always be a vampire, especially if Lord Akeldama is my father. If I have my Dama, I could do anything. Everyone knows how much I like dressing up, and I really love the descriptions of the dandies and all of their fancy outfits and how everything matches and everything is so colorful and everything is, you know, it's just magical. So I think I want to be a dandy.
I think you do too. I think you just want to have a wander through their wardrobes, don't you? Just look at all the.
I do. Ooh. I want to traipse cheese through their. No. Oh my goodness.
Oh, okay. That was good.
The end. The end of Would You Rather.
Yay. One.
Yeah. So I'm really excited that you are a co-host on this show now, because I really love hearing all of your Would You Rather answers. And I know I said this earlier, but I was sad when you didn't post anything to Facebook. But now I got to hear all of the answers, so it's even better.
Well, I could post them, but then you wouldn't read out the comments.
Right. Yeah. You can't do that. I can't be spoiled. Can't be spoiled by your answers. Even though I am spoiled. I am spoiled because I'm getting all of them now.
Yeah, spoiled, and then you just get me harassing you during the week.
Yeah, and that's fine. It's all fine.
But thank you very much for asking me as well. Like I said, when you did, it is a complete honor, and I was eating my breakfast and I was like, what? Oh my god. And my mouth just dropped and it was just like, wow, okay. And it's coming at a time in my life where I kind of want to say yes to more adventures and more new things. And yes, it's a very busy time in my life, full of new things and textbooks. But no, honestly, it's thank you very much for asking me. It is like a massive honor. So thank you.
Well, I'm very glad. And I hope now that we'll get more listeners, because everyone wants to listen to you talk more than they want to listen to me talk.
I really don't have a nice British accent.
No, I'm sorry. But maybe I'll learn. I'll learn.
No, I haven't got a nice British accent. I don't speak the Queen's English.
Yeah, but you don't sound like Dick Van Dyke. That's the most important thing.
Oh, Gavna, are you sure about that? Oh, God, I can't.
Oh, my gosh.
Nation. I'm sorry.
Okay, do you have any life lessons that you took from this book? Don't be a spoiled brat.
Don't be a spoiled brat. Tea is life. Tea is good. Tea is a beverage I can be drunk at any point in the day. Don't wear a sun hat to a night call.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
Ah, unless you wanted to be a spotted crumpet. Ha, stolen.
You did steal it. Yeah, I don't. I mean, that's the only thing that I learned. That's the only thing that I learned in this book is, you know, you have to wear your proper attire when you're going out of an evening.
All political accords should be written with ambiguity.
Ooh.
There you go.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Head.
Yes. Okay. So we need to be very ambiguous in all of our important writings.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
Read the terms and conditions.
No one ever reads the terms and conditions. You just click the box and you go.
Tell us about it.
Okay. So what about final thoughts?
Ooh. More.
Yay, more. And there's three more. Yay.
Yeah, I know Percy has his own book. I know and I know this, the other characters do get their own storylines, and I'm excited for that. And I think the introduction of these characters, it's like just made the Parasol Protectorate world blossom even more, and I'm excited to learn about them.
Yeah, I'm excited for you to read them.
Yeah,
because I need someone to talk about them with, and now I have someone, but you haven't finished them yet. So you really need to finish them, because I need to know what you think.
I'll finish what I'm listening to currently, and then listen to. I've got a good Halloween episode.
Yeah,
I need to listen to that.
Yeah, I need to listen to that one again too, just because it's very good.
In a dark room.
Ooh, scary. Yeah, definitely lock the door.
Yes. What about your final thoughts? What's your takeaways?
I don't have anything of any import. I just love Gail Carriger and everything that she does. So it was nice to get another new series from her.
Yeah, she's got such a good writing style.
She does. And she's just really delightful in real life, too.
Yeah, she's interactive on social media as well, mm-hmm. which just makes that engagement and, you know, it's kind of like it tangible. It makes you kind of like encouraged to delve into her works a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It's good. Yeah. It's good. Thank you, Gail. She's really good.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for everything. Yes. Okay. So now we have a little bit of a new segment that Claire is going to bring to us here. And it is called, If You Liked This, Try This.
Ooh.
You have to say it that way.
Do I get a fanfare?
Yes.
So, Gail Carriger was the one who introduced me to steampunk books. Totally her fault. I've liked them for 10 years. It isn't the sole books like style series that I read anything, but there was two that stood out to me that I have read, and I thought, well, if you like this, you may like this. And it's the Immortal Empire series by Kate Locke. The first one's God Save the Queen. That's quite interesting. It's set in London, and it's a little bit more of a like a policey kind of drama, a little bit of a murder mystery style, dirtier. Not it's literally dirt, like it's a lot of sewers, and a little bit more of there's a certain like were element, but not like completely werewolf kind of thing, usually involving rats. That one's quite interesting. And the other one is I never know if I say this right, Mel Jean Brooke, and it's the INC series. There is a lot in there, and it's like a full developed world. And she actually did something for the Kraken King, I think it was, where she released the book but in parts. I think it was about 8 parts, sort of serialized, and that was quite interesting. They're probably more a little bit saucier. There's probably a little bit more, I'm not going to say sexual explicit content, but you know, there's probably more nudity than Rue does.
Rue is naked a lot.
She is. And there's probably it's Canel's sexy lessons of sexiness.
Sensual steampunk sensual sexiness.
So I think if you want to try and if you want a bit further adventure into the world of steampunk, apart from obviously reading all of the other Gail Carriger books, do it now. Pause, we'll wait. Right, if you read them, good, thank you. Is to check out Kate Locke and Mel Jean Brooke. I would recommend those two.
Okay, good recommendations. I'll have to read them because I haven't read them. So thanks. Thanks for those recommendations.
You're very welcome.
All right, well, that is it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire.
Listen in next time as we talk about Unwind by Neil Schusterman. Send an email to fictionalhangover@gmail.com if you'd like to join in on an upcoming Would You Rather segment, or you can catch us on social media too. Also, be sure to look out for the next Would You Rather poll on all of our social media platforms, including Pinterest now, apparently, because Pinterest is a thing. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
Check check out Fictional Hangover online at fictionalhangover.com, on Instagram at Fictional Hangover, on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at Fictional Hangover, no ER. Special thanks to Liz Emerson for the theme song. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon.